welcome to One Inch Past Scary Podcast. This is Kirsty Say It. It is October 7th, and it's been a little longer since my last podcast. This seems to be my opening statement now. This is just my shtick now. I'm just like, I didn't record last week, and then I give my excuse, and so this is how we roll. Anyway, I actually did record last week. I didn't release it into the wild, and on the way over to the woods, I'm sitting in the parking lot, which appears to be my new spot, because my backyard is just too loud. Sadly, but we'll see how noisy the woods gets today, because it's a fairly nice day and I am in a parking lot. So if you hear a lot of rumbling around with cars parking and door slamming, that's what we've got going on. So last week I did actually record a podcast. I didn't publish it because I was having second thoughts, and you know how I've talked about just getting the damn thing done, just record it, don't edit it, just put it out there is my style. And that has stood me in fairly good stead, because I've got several podcast episodes up here now, and I've managed to keep it up on a semi-regular basis, which did break that whole cycle that I struggle with perfectionism and the analysis paralysis, and it has to be perfect or it can't be. But in this case, I was trying to convey an experience I'd had, and I was kind of adding to the noise of a topic that I don't think needs additional noise in my attempt to explain my way of understanding something in a whole different way, which is beneficial to me. And so I'm going to attempt to just explain it without using that particular piece of noise. So basically the thread was regarding communication and in terms of listening to people. So I talk a lot on this podcast about finding the right words for our experiences, which I think is so critically important to healing and to being able to create distance between ourselves, the essence of who we are, and the experiences that we've had or the thoughts and emotions that we sort of sometimes sit and stew in. And if you are able to create a distance through words by describing an experience that's happened to you, or to describe your feelings and emotions, the next step is being able to say, okay, but I am not this experience that I've described. Whereas if you sit in silence in the emotions or perceptions or impressions that maybe an experience has left you with, without finding the words to describe those emotions or perceptions or experiences, you can easily become attached to the idea that you are those feelings, or that life is the feeling and emotional perception that you have, which very well might be quite negative. So to me, you know, being able to accurately, not just accurately, but in a way that feels true to you, express yourself or express emotions or experiences that you've had to someone else, or even, you know, in the course of writing them down or writing poetry or even releasing them in some kind of other art form. You can create that distance, and that distance is just such a wonderfully powerful thing, because we are not our feelings. We are not the stories that have happened to us, or the stories that our mind creates about what has happened to us and what that means about us, and all those things, which is so important to know. We are completely separate beings, and through a lot of meditation, I have really been able to recognize the distance and the power in that distance of being able to observe myself looking or thinking thoughts and go, okay, that is a thought train that you're on right now, but you're on it. It isn't you, right? And then be able to make choices about whether or not to stay on that train or go on that walk into the dark and twisty woods, or to perhaps save that hike and save my energy for other things. So that's usually kind of the theme that I expand on in one way or another. And it's such a powerful it's such a powerful and needed thing for people to understand the difference and having the words or having a means of expression for what we feel like or what we've been through, so that we can indeed move on and see that we ourselves are separate and autonomous and able to create whatever new story we would like to create. However, there is a really important part of life, and that's called listening to other people's experiences, so that we can both cooperate with them, have good relationships with them, and learn from them. What I was trying to kind of convey last time was basically how I was put in a position that somebody who, in my place in society, is not as often put into as many other people in today's society are. And so it was an uncomfortable experience, but a necessary one, where I felt that I was completely not heard, just not heard. My voice wasn't counted, or the time, you know, people had decided sort of almost as a, you know, the majority had spoken. And that meant that any dissenting views, or they believed, a powerful majority, shall we say, believed that something was right and dissenting voices were not to be heard at all. They weren't welcomed. And the thing is that the issue at hand is actually going to be put to a vote, right, soon. This is a local scenario. And the problem that I discovered with this is that when people feel as though their dissenting voices are unacceptable or unappreciated or just plain wronged by others, when they feel like they've been made wrong, they may go quiet, but they don't stop having those views. Okay, they don't stop having the views, and often they'll double down on those views just because they feel angered and they feel disenfranchised and they feel ignored. And so I have been in the position of the very vocal majority before, shouting down the voices of other people who haven't had those same, you know, who don't see things the same way I do. Shouting them down really belligerently, thinking I was actually doing well by them, by everybody, by saying, we don't want to hear your side. The thing is that, you know, this gets so dicey and it gets so, it really just gets so confusing and hazy when it comes to, you know, things like hate speech and intimidation. But there is a real line in the sand that people will draw way before then and just be like, you know, differences of ideas are just not welcomed here. And this is, I feel like more and more worldwide, our societies are becoming so polarized because of this. And I'm so guilty of it. And I'm not just guilty of it in our society. And just to finish up the thread of society, I do want to say, you know, so I was put in the position where I was in the dissenting view. I was in the quiet dissenting view. And I had come to the conclusion that, fine, you may not listen to me, but I will not vote the way you want me to. And neither will a bunch of other people I know who are quite intimidated to speak out, but you may not be getting as many votes as you think you will. And for some reason, some man, said something, and I shouldn't say some man, he's a good friend of mine, a really wise guy. He kind of like looked at the, he listened to enough people to see what was going on and kind of made himself available as a non-judgmental listener to people who still had the doubts against the majority, you know, still had the dissenting views, and was patient enough to hear them out and to say, like, let me hear you. And it was a real game changer for me, because he did hear me without shouting me down. And he gave validity to my position and said, I get it and I understand and I agree with you. However, you know, sometimes we have to do hard things. We have to make hard decisions, which aren't perfect. And really did sway me significantly significantly and make me more inclined to vote for now what, you know, I was dissenting against, and to try to explain to others, or at least give other people the opportunity to be heard and make decisions in that framework. And so I think that this is an important, just a human lesson to learn right now, where things are getting so heated and escalated. I've certainly been a polarizing figure, and it was a mistake, and it's something I do quite dramatically regret. In terms of many things, I have a platform, I have a pretty strident voice when I get going, and I do regret that. So I regret using it in that way. It was not a disciplined approach. It was coming from a triggered place and an angry place. And to be honest, at the time I was doing the best I could. But now I know better and I intend to do better. And I see that the thread just continues in every facet of communication. It continues when we have little kids. And I have found myself on that same day just being in a really sort of bad mood, or overwhelmed, should I say. I was just overwhelmed and exhausted. And I said to my daughter, who was having some complaints, the younger one, guess what? I don't want to hear your complaints. I just don't want to hear them. I don't want to hear them. When I pick you up, I don't want to hear that complaint anymore. I'm tired of hearing that complaint. And I said it in not a particularly thoughtful way. I mean, I did explain to her why, and why I didn't think she should have those complaints, and why it was exhausting for me. But because I was coming from this kind of frustrated and exasperated place, it was probably better left unsaid. Because what really kind of sank in after I had that experience was that when people feel shut down in any way and unheard, that is actually an act of violence against another person. It really is. Of course, it's not physical, whatever, but it really is so disrespectful to somebody else's soul. And I know how much it hurts when somebody shuts me down, even in a dismissive way. It feels bad, and I'm sure it feels really bad for a little kid coming from a parent, or a big kid coming from a parent. And then it occurred to me, if I say to my kid, I just don't want to hear it anymore, how many other things might she then surmise that I don't want to hear about? Don't I want to hear about more than I want to hear more than I don't hear, than I want to not hear about? As a kid gets older, they tell you less and less and less things. So to ever tell a kid, I don't want to hear about your problems, your issues, your concerns, that is a real bad thing to say, because she's now 8, but in a blink of an eye, she'll be 19, 11, 12. And this is when things start to get more distant. Kids start to disconnect from their parents as their primary source of, or even, you know, earlier, of input. And when, if I have built that little wall and said, you know what, I'm not a safe place for you when you're feeling tired and overwhelmed and you're expressing your needs, as unreasonable as I feel that they may be, and the fact that I cannot even meet those needs physically, financially, emotionally, I cannot meet those needs. I could say that to her, but I don't have to tell her that I don't want to hear them. And it really gave me pause in parenting. It was like, you know, we spend our whole lives as parents of teenagers and young adults trying to get them to open up more and be like, tell me what's going on and express to us. But if we're telling little kids to not whine or not tell us their problems, and there's difference between expressing yourself clearly and in a reasonable way and whining, of course, and we don't want to encourage whining because whining is not a good communication skill. But the way I phrased it, I don't want to hear it. And when it was something that actually meant a lot to my kid, really humbled me after this experience. When I saw how being shut down made me angry and slightly rebellious, and just created a great distance between me and wanting to connect with my community on this, which has always been sort of my MO. I've always felt like, no, we've got to come to common ground. We all live here and we're all basically good people and stuff. It just made me feel like so disconnected, which is not good. People feeling disconnected don't do good things, right? We don't like it. We don't like to isolate or disconnect people because they tend to not thrive in and of themselves. And then they, you know, the there's just a lot of enmity that results from people feeling isolated, because that is a primal urge to feel connected to people, to feel understood and to feel included is primal, and it is physically painful. Scientists have found that the same things that get, you know, feel pain, the same parts of the brain that like light up as a pain, as, you know, pain signals, light up when people feel isolated. And those same fear receptors light up when people feel rejected by a group, even in terms of ideologies or just, you know, anything. Because we are communal animals. We like to be with people. We like to, it's inherent in our primal survival, you know, code. So, the importance of not shutting down people is it's wired into us to want to be accepted. And so if we remember that and we try to stay human about all this stuff and realize that we have so much more power when we stay connected to people and we give them respect, the respect of at least being heard, the respect of at least expressing their feelings. And of course, you know, like I say, there are lines in the sand that can't be crossed, you know, hate speech and, you know, straight up, you know, threatening the lives and the well-being and the rights of other people cannot be tolerated or magnified at all. But way before that happens, or sometimes even after that happens, there are often opportunities for people to sit in the quiet and understand where these hateful things come from, what kinds of fears and biases they're rooted in. And when we have reasonable and respectful conversations, we actually have a shot at reworking those perceptions. But we never do when we shut people down, because then people get really double down in how they feel, and then they add rage and disenfranchisement to it, and they get really, and this is how people even get radicalized. We've, you know, this is all psychology, this is science. So that was my experience. I felt it from the other side. I saw how easily it could be undone by somebody who was calm and respectful and trustworthy, who I felt like was my friend. And I also saw where I was continuing to do wrong by my kids when I say, I just don't want to hear that. Let's not use that phrase with our kids. I talk all the time about listening to and believing your kids. Doesn't mean that you have to hear every single whinge and whine and give in to your kids. By any means, I'm wholeheartedly against that. But it does mean that if your child is willing to speak to you in a reasonable voice that you can find tolerable, and that's really important to me. If my kid is at some kind of whiny fever pitch and is hysterical, I'm like, this communication is intolerable to me. It feels painful on my skin. I can't hear you right now because you're talking in a really angry way, but I want to hear your message. So when you've calmed down, can you please come back and talk to me about it? And usually they'll make great efforts to deep breathe, drink water, get it together and come and talk to me. Well, then that passes. But at least they know that I'm open to their idea if they can fix the delivery somewhat so that we can both be respectful to each other. Okay, so there was that. So that was basically the message that I was trying to convey last week. I want to go back to what I was saying about going into, you know, following these little thought trains. I had an experience this morning where I honestly don't even know where it originated. It was absolutely crazy. And, you know, there was something to be said for, you know, when they say, little demon whispered in my ear. You know, you hear people saying that kind of thing. A little demon, the devil on my shoulder, actually whispered something in my ear. The devil made me do it. And so usually I can really track back into my psyche where something starts up, but I am not even certain. I'm just peacefully like going about my business, and then something is like, I wonder why you weren't invited to that thing. And I can't even remember what the thing was or who I was even thinking about. It's that insane. And I was able to catch it really quickly. And I think the reason I can't even remember what the thing was or who the parties involved were was because I so thoroughly detached from it with immediacy. And I was surprised at how easy it was to do, but it was easy, like I said, because of meditation. And I had this very, very clear moment in my mind where I was separate from that thought train and I observed myself. And it's not like in an out-of-body way. My consciousness observed this thought train that was getting ready to just go out of the station and into a dark and lonely woods with all sorts of scary things. And it said, do you really want to go on that highly unproductive, crazy train today? Or would you prefer to just stay in this moment? It didn't even give me the opposite of, but think of how many good and loyal friends and family you do have. There was nothing like that. It wasn't like that. It was like, do you want to get on that crazy train? Or would you like to stay present? And would you like to look at the steering wheel and beyond it? I was driving. Would you like to look out and see the beautiful autumn grasses? Would you like to focus on the fact that, oh, there's all those seed pods that you love at this time of year that look kind of like, I don't know, birds of prey. They're so interesting and they're so, they're almost macabre, but so incredible. They really are amazing the way these giant seed pods open in the fields. Would you like to look at the way the sun is shining down through that tree and that one patch of tree is going red in the shape of a heart that you just love every year? Do you want to stay present in this moment and feel the steering wheel beneath your hands and note all the beauty that's around you and be present in this moment, which is actually the only reality that exists for you? And it was a split second decision, and I was easily able to stay present in the moment. And it was so, it was just like, oh, it was huge weight rolled off my shoulders. I was like, turn my back on that wild and windy wood that honestly would have taken me home feeling depleted, depressed, sort of in a So, you know, that free-floating, yucky, depression, sludgy way, de-energized, not really wanting to do the things that I had laid out for the day. But instead, I was just taken with this beautiful scene that surrounds me, which is for a brief time, because autumn here is spectacular but short, and enjoy it. And I was like, how many times a day do I get onto crazy? Why do I keep saying crazy crane? Crazy train, instead of just staying in my actual life, which is the only thing that is real. The moment in front of you is real. And it really is so hard to do if you've created a whole lifestyle of worrying about the future and ruminating about the past. If your body is wired from, say, PTSD or childhood trauma to alternate between worrying about the future and living in the past, the story of the past, because you just can't disconnect who you are from that message or those experiences. It's pretty, you know, it takes some work. For me, it took therapy. But then once I'd unraveled the work of the past, it was like, okay, now what to do with this unraveled and unfettered brain? What do you do with it now? You know, now it's just going to roam free and get into all sorts of other trouble. And that's where meditation came in. And I really, you know, I talk about meditation and I think I have spoken about it in glowing terms quite a few times in the last few episodes. But it really does allow me, the more I practice it, and it honestly, it's a matter of fitness, just as much as my running, just as much as anything. But it does allow me to make those choices and for them to not feel excruciatingly hard. Because a lot of people say to me, I don't meditate because I cannot. And they're the same people. They're not the same people. But a lot of people will also say to me, I don't run. I can't run. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So look, if you have legs and they're ambulatory, you know, like they move in ways and you don't actually have a recurring kind of injury that happens when you run, you just choose not to run. And that's absolutely fine. It's fine. But it's when the thing was when people say to me, I wish I could run, but I can't. I've run it like I can run like 20 yards and then I just get exhausted. I'm like, hi, that's, yeah, pretty typical. So that's why you should just go 22 yards. And then after that, 23 or 24, whatever a yard is. I don't even know why I'm speaking in yards. I don't even know what a yard is after all these times, after all these years. I know what a meter is, but you know. So it just makes me laugh because people say the same thing about meditation. They're like, I would love to meditate, but I just can't. My mind just won't do that. It just jumps all over the place. And I'm like, yeah, of course it does. Like, obviously. I mean, 5 minutes even of meditation, of having your mind not wander, is like a really great accomplishment, of course. But that's not what it's about. It's like getting out there, you know, moving your body. It doesn't result in the first week, doesn't result in a marathon. And meditation doesn't happen overnight. We have got to start off by making the intention, okay, I would like to start to learn how to control my mind a little bit, and to be able to quiet my mind a little bit, and to be able to say, you know, okay, little mind, we're going to sit right here now on our thinking mat, and we're going to clear our thoughts, or we're going to observe our thoughts today and then let them pass without attachment, or we're going to actually meditate on one thing, or we're going to practice using a word, or any number of things. There's so many different ways to meditate, but it starts with making the intention and then practicing it, and it being hard for a while. And, you know, the better you, I don't think it's ever something that you've mastered. I mean, I'm in no danger of mastering meditation. And I'm certain that even the greatest gurus who can meditate for hours and do all sorts of amazing things with their mind would say that they've only, you know, scratched the tip of the iceberg in terms of meditation, in terms of what the brain and consciousness is capable of. So I don't want, you know, I don't want to sound condescending or like in any kind of way, because I know, I remember it used to actually give me a sense of alarm when I'd be like, and now I will clear my mind. And my mind just became this complete mess of words and thoughts and anxieties. And it was awful to sit in the silence with myself. But now that I've practiced, I can tell when I'm in better shape, when I'm in better shape, or when I really am not in shape at all. And when I've let it go for a few days and, you know, the craziness and noise of life is let in, it does get quite a bit difficult, but I can always get it back. Just like with fitness. Just because we fell off the fitness wagon doesn't mean that we should never try again. So, you know, I really do have to put in my plug, you know, now that I'm no longer seeing a therapist, it is so important for me to have that quiet time and to have that centering time. It's imperative for me. And I have used it for everything. I've used it to help myself with sleep, with anxiety. Sleep has been a problem for me almost my whole life for obvious reasons. And I found that, you know, I've been able to put myself to sleep even in moments of great anxiety recently. I've been able to get some rest through using the skills I've learned in meditation. And it's been such a relief. You know, it's not as easy as I would like it to. And sometimes I need a sleep aid as well. But before, when nothing would touch it, I can clear my mind enough to just feel restful. And it feels very powerful, to be honest. It feels tremendously powerful. Okay, so there's that. I wanted to update you on the marathon training. I am actually, like I said, in the parking lot of the woods. I'm about to go on my first run in a week. I haven't run a single step in a week. That's not true. I run as a personal trainer alongside. But a solo kind of run at my tempo, and which, by the way, is actually super slow, but especially on a marathon. But you know, sort of like a formal run, I've not done because I've been terrified that the run I did last Sunday, which was a full marathon in training, I just kind of went for it, which might not have been the wisest. We'll see. But it was fun and exciting, and I'm glad I did it. In case I don't, you know, you just never know what might happen in the next 2 weeks before I run the actual marathon. These things get derailed sometimes, but busy, as you can hear, lacing up my shoes right now. But I was about to say that I haven't run in a week, and I am frankly terrified for this first run because I'm so scared to find out if I'm injured, right? Because I've put a ton of time and investment and even money into this marathon. And I've also had so many kind donors towards the charity that I'm running in aid of, that this race is in aid of, which is Nationwide Children's Hospital. And I'm still definitely open to donors. If you would be so kind and generous to donate to Nationwide Children's Hospital, they treat children for everything from, you know, measles to cancer and broken legs and everything, regardless of the parents' ability to pay. And they also, you know, help traumatized children, and just every single aspect of care is beautifully taken care of. So there is a link through my Instagram, which is Momedy Kirsty on Instagram, like comedy, but Momedy, because I'm a mom. Kirsty, all one word, on Instagram. There is a link there if you would like to donate. I will carry your name with me as I run. And when I run, I high five all the little kids along the way. They've chosen 26 children's champions. Those are kids who have been treated or are currently being treated at the hospital, to high five the runners along the course, which is incredibly touching, moving, inspiring. There is another mile, which is called the Angels Mile, where parents, amazingly brave and selfless parents, will stand with, I just get really choked up even talking about it. They have photos of the kids who didn't make it, and it's a commemorative mile. It's really emotional, and they will always, you know, they thank the donors, which I think is just so, such a beautifully selfless and brave thing to do, to put yourself in that really vulnerable position and revisit those feelings and that pain, and in such an intense way. The whole thing is an incredibly meaningful marathon, and I'm so honored, and it's really taken the pressure off of this being some kind of ego project or all about me, because I'm constantly reminded how much more these kids do every day in terms of digging deep into their bodies and their minds and their souls to keep going, and their parents too. So it's been an honor, and it's actually made this whole training experience it's made it really enjoyable to keep that perspective. I've really enjoyed my time doing it. But it's just funny to me that after running 26 miles, this short little, like, you know, I'm tapering now, so I'm having, you know, my longest runs are 8 or 12 miles. It's nothing compared to what they were. And that I've been so terrified to discover, you know, the reality of what I might have done, what injuries I might have picked up or done to myself. And it's fairly irrational because, you know, I got to the end and I didn't feel too terrible, and I've been working with a chiropractor and everything, but it just shows me that, you know, and I'm wanting to express all of this to you for a variety of reasons. One of them is, you know, I've talked about, I feel, you know, powerful and I feel strong and I feel brave and I feel in charge of my life in lots of ways. Now with the help of so much therapy, with the help of other people supporting me and my story, for also the skills that I've learned and the meditation I'm doing and the soul work I've been doing and the spiritual sort of quest I've been on has all been so helpful. But then these little things still scare me. And I'm quite comfortable in telling you that I'm scared and I'm psyching myself out, and I'm pretty neurotic about my body in the last little while, just because I've invested so much and I don't want anything to go wrong. And, you know, all these neuroses and fears still remain, and I'm going to do it anyway. Right? That there is a lot to be said for, you don't have to feel perfect. You don't have to feel like you've got everything together. You don't have to feel like confident and great and strong and wonderful in every way to embark on things. You just have to freaking do them. And you know what? I'm going to go out and run, and we'll see what we'll see. And then we'll make the choice after that. And like, there's my nervous hysterical laugh. Like, I'm scared. Like, it may seem irrational, but it's a reality for me. And then I will work through whatever that is. And it's what I've come to think of as the curriculum. You know, maybe my curriculum is training all the way for a marathon and then getting injured right before I get to do it, and what I can learn from that, and trying to work, you know, and that sort of helps to manage the anxiety a lot, and helping to, you know, work with the acceptance of that. So if you've got something that you are like feeling freaking terrified to do and it's really paralyzing you, I haven't run for a whole week because it's recommended not to run for a full 7 days after that kind of distance. But if I don't run today, then it is kind of giving into fear, and it will interfere with my performance probably in my fitness and stuff. And so this is where I have to step up to the plate and acknowledge anxiety and do it anyway. And there's so much to be said for just do it anyway. Just do it anyway. Because whatever you've got if going on and whatever fear you have to face, it's so much scarier if you're just thinking about it and you're not actually facing it. So I will look forward to getting out there and facing that fear head on. And it's honestly the only way to live our lives. And I just want to leave you with that little pep talk. Like, you may think that this fear is ridiculous, and in the scope of things, when there's other things that we could be dealing with, like scary diagnoses, or, you know, a child who's struggling with addiction, or, you know, you think your spouse may be cheating, or, you know, all of these things that we sometimes have to belly up to, or leaving a situation that we're in, or exposing our abuser, or, you know, there's a ton of more terrifying things that I can think of, or that I have faced, or that I've seen others face very, very courageously. But I think the principle remains the same. If it lurks out there and we don't actually step up to the plate, it's there's nothing we can do with it. There's no, you know, we cannot progress into our curriculum if we don't just step up and say, okay, I'm taking this on. What's next on this curriculum of life? What am I going to learn from it? If we just keep pushing it off and pushing it off and pushing it off, we cannot, you know, get to the next level. And so I really want to sort of leave you with that today, you know, as well as all the other themes that I've sort of rambled about. Listening and hearing and communicating and meditation and but also that this final thought is just whatever it is that you're terrified of right now, just do it so you can figure out what the next step is going to be, and more importantly, what this is all here to teach you and how it's going to make you better, and have some sense of peace and acceptance in that if you possibly can, because everything will turn out okay when we look at life like that, when we do have that sense of acceptance and calm, that truly it is a kind universe. You are loved, and all things can ultimately be for our benefit. I genuinely believe it. I believe it with all my heart, but not if we're hiding in corners, and not if we won't step up. We won't step up to the plate that the universe knows that we are capable of stepping up to. So with that, I still have great hope in my heart that all will go well, and I will update you, I'm sure. But thank you so much to those of you who have donated. And again, if you would like to donate, even if you do it in honor of listening to this podcast and it has helped you in any way, I would really appreciate that. If not, I totally understand, because there are a lot of worthy causes, and sometimes they include just feeding ourselves and our families. So no pressure whatsoever, but thank you to those who have, and anybody who might consider it's a great cause. And I will talk to you darling people again very soon. I hope you are doing well. Sending all my love out to you and all my confidence in you. You've got this. You can do this. I know you can, and I believe in you. You are up to the task. Don't hide from it anymore. It will feel so much better if you just face it. Love you so much. Bye-bye.